Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Crack open the lemon-scented serviettes and dish out the complimentary pretzels. Fabio says it's okay. England are on the plane to South Africa. And they're not alone. Spain are through as well, and Paraguay too, while Argentina slump again. Football Weekly Extra reports on Maradona's latest lineup of Charlies and all the rest of the drama worldwide. Meanwhile, with the club game getting back underway this weekend, we preview an exceptional lineup of Premier League clashes. Arsenal at Man City, Man United at Spurs, and Carlo Ancelotti's Chelsea at the Britannia. Somewhere in amongst all that, your post in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, boys. Another day, another tip-top lineup of podcasting excellence with Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. And John Ashdown.
Hi, James.
And a big, big pod welcome to Matt Scott. Matt, looking very smart today.
Thank you very much.
All right, any reason? You were on Sky News earlier today, is that right?
Whoring, media-wise.
Right, okay. And what were you talking about?
Football, believe it or not.
Right, okay. And you were talking about England.
Yes, let's principally.
Okay. And the question I asked you was, can England win the World Cup? And you said yes, Matt.
I did, yes.
All right, then.
Yes, and that was not motivated by patriotic hyperbole, because that's
you genuinely think, well, lots of people do. We talked on Monday about England. Barney Rone was a bit down on them, talking about all their flaws.
Barney Rone, contrary? Yeah. No.
And but I have to say, none of those issues, whether they're problems at the back of the goalkeeper, none of them were apparent against this Croatia side. Paul, you had the honour of doing the minute by minute for this game.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I agree with Matt. I think England can win it.
Right.
I wouldn't make them favourites, but they're certainly strong contenders.
Yes,
Croatia, must be said, were awful last night, and were of course missing some key players. But England are missing some important players too. I mean, Joe Cole and Theo Walcott still have to come back. Rio Ferdinand still has to come back.
Mm.
So they're a very strong squad, and they have a flexibility under Capello that they didn't previously have. And obviously, they press and they play at a tempo that makes it very difficult for opponents to thrive with, and which English players are more comfortable than most at. The one shortcoming they may still have, and that we haven't been able to establish whether they've overcome it, I think, yet in this group, which turned out to be quite a weak group, is their ability to concentrate for 90 minutes against top-class opposition. Throughout this group, they still have, on occasion, become slightly ragged, made some mistakes, just silly things like Rob Green handling the ball outside the box against Slovenia at the weekend, and there's countless things. But you imagine that Capello can iron that out over the next few months, and no one will relish playing them next summer, that's for sure.
No. Power and pace, Matt Scott. Power and pace.
Yeah, far be it from me as an Arsenal fan to admire anything that resembles Chelsea, but they really do look like Jose Mourinho's team for me. They've got the physical stature that I think little Arsenal-like Spain might find that if they were to give a penalty away in the early seventh minute, as happened last night, that they may well feel that there's no way back in to a game against a team like them, because they are all above 6 foot, and the man who isn't, who springs to mind, is Wayne Rooney, and he punches way above his rate.
Yeah. I don't think Aaron Lennon is either.
No, Theo Walcott's not. But that's that's the one area actually. Yeah. That these are not big athletes.
But Lennon has emerged as a very important part of the team, because he is one guy who can destabilise any defence with, and brings that element of anarchic unpredictability. That
Walcott starts. Walcott starts.
Instead of Lennon?
Yes.
Crazy talk.
No, and again, this is not hyperbole motivated by bias, but he does start. And the reason, I think, is that he has more of a reputation. He will pin back fullbacks, and also his pace scares people on that flank. And that is so important when you've got to protect Glenn Johnson, who clearly is our weakest link.
But doesn't all that go for Lennon as well?
No, because he doesn't have the reputation that Walcott does. I think Capello's playing this absolutely right, and that's psychologically. He's got the right blend of players to doing the right things together, and it's all about...
What do you mean psychologically?
I mean, if you want someone with a big reputation, play Beckham there.
No, because Beckham's not going to pin people back. People will not be scared of Beckham, his pace. The point is about
I'm just making the point. I don't think
question for the thicky at the back. What do you mean psychologically?
Well, he's keeping all those players on their toes. He makes sure that every one of them has no certainty. I mean, the complacency is what Paul was talking about earlier, them being ragged. The reason why they're struggling to focus is because they're playing against teams that just aren't up there. Rio Ferdinand notwithstanding, I think actually the rest of them, if they are put up against some proper teams where there's really something at stake, there will be real focus. Wayne Rooney got booted out up in the air after 2 minutes last night, and he managed to focus enough to keep those snarling features keep them smiling.
Mm. Just to strike a note of pessimism in this loving here, that, you know, England racked up 25 points in qualifying in 2006 in a group not dissimilar in standard to this one. Struggled in the tournament itself. The two times in recent years that they've qualified for major tournaments unbeaten in groups 88 and 92 out in the first round in the actual event itself. And no team, surely no team that has Emil Heskey as its attacking spearhead is going to win the World Cup. I don't know if I want to be part of that world.
Carlton Cole is better at being Emil Heskey than Emil Heskey is.
Come on.
But he can do everything Heskey does and finish.
But
most of the time.
Couldn't you replace my previous sentence with putting the words Carlton Cole in for Emil Heskey?
I mean, no, you're just prejudiced.
Well, I don't know.
Is there no room for a player to develop and evolve in your world?
No, there is.
But he's not. They look at the role he has to play. I mean, like Guy Varche for France in 98. He's not in there to be a goal scorer.
Absolutely, well said. Now, put the point about Heskey as well. I mean, our most taxing fixture in terms of what actually mattered recently was against Russia. After, you know, I mean, okay, Zagreb was an important game. We won that 4-1. Theo Walcott scoring a hat trick, but Russia at Wembley was a very, very important game, and Heskey ran that show. England won it 3-0. He was injured for the rest of that tournament, the qualifying tournament, and look what happened to our Euro 2008 campaign. He could have been the paper that went over Steve McLaren's cracks.
What is different about Capello?
You tell us. You know more.
Well, this is the thing is that it shouldn't be that important. He doesn't pick an incredible range of... It's not that he's gone back to the drawing board in terms of players. He's just a little bit more scary. Is it the fact that he's foreign, that they don't feel as easy? They can't read him the way they could read, say, Steve McLaren or Ericsson? Is it because he's not trying to be their friends or because he earns more money than even they do?
No.
What is it about him? Tactically, he's not a revelation either.
Oh, he is.
Is he?
Yeah.
Why is he a revelation tactically?
Because he can recognise what our entire nation agonised over for 15 years of the pair of them playing football is that Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard can play together. I mean, that is a wonderful thing to be able to...
But he's done exactly what Sven-Göran Eriksson did with him. He put Gerrard out wide and left Lampard in the middle.
No, but he didn't, did he? I mean, Eriksson played the two of them in the middle together.
One thing under Eriksson was we had this famous the problem of England's left side of midfield.
Right.
Which, of course, is where Gerrard played last night. With great success because he has Lennon bombing down the right and Gerrard then attacks the back post on the left. He was able to do that against Croatia because Croatia were particularly weak. It remains to be seen whether really good opponents, Gerrard as a notionally wide left-sided player can prosper.
Defensively, he does do the job properly. When we don't have the ball, which was seldom last night, he does hug that touchline and does tackle back, which is very, very important. And he is not, you know, I mean, he's a reckless but not a bad tackler. To go back to your question, because I focused on the aside about the tactics, it's success. I mean, it is success that means that he has such respect. Such respect of those players. He also has them on a very, very tight rein, where there were the indulgences of Ericsson and McLaren to the extent that David Beckham was able to pick the penthouse suite and put some bed in it, reputedly, at the 2006 World Cup. He came in and said, right, I'm going to have a curfew. I'm not going to have any flip-flops on people's feet around the hotel. You're going to maintain certain decorous standards. And that...
No criticism.
crisps on the plane.
No complimentary pretzels. That is something that he will be very, very, you know, that has them sitting up and thinking, well, hang on, this man's a bit different. What's going on here? And they did initially have a bit of a renegade instinct against that, the England players. But as results came with it, they recognised that his methods had to be followed 100%. And it is those little details that make no difference, actually. Hmm. But that it's such a different regime in the round that it makes them think, well, he's got that bit right, then right. Surely the flip-flops actually matters.
Okay, producer Pete, no Chris for Monday's pod. <okay. laughs>
And in the Southern Hemisphere winter, it's possible to do that. It wasn't possible in 2002 because the humidity in Saipong. It was not possible in 2006 under the heat wave in Germany. And also, as you say, probably the manager didn't instill enough of that desire or passion in them. I think this time it's a very, very good chance for England.
All right, Private Dick posting and saying, if I was English, I'd be pretty optimistic. Mentions Capello mentions the world-class players, but says, yes, South Africa, a venue that will suit England, not only the climactic factor, but also once the home side goes out in the group stage, assuming they do, England will find themselves the darlings of the EPL fanatical locals.
Also in England's favour are the struggles of others.
Right, John, let me just stop you there. Because no one's struggling, of course, more than Scotland, and that must be tempering most English fans' joy this morning, the fact that their less fortunate neighbour Scotland won't be attending the World Cup party. Of course, their defeat at Hampden Park to the Netherlands. Was it Hampden Park, was it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, to the Netherlands means they're out. Norway take the runner-up spot on goal difference for all the good it'll do them.
Yeah, it looks like Norway are going to slip out of that playoff race, doesn't it, I think?
Yeah. Well, there you go. A finest hour it was, apparently, this 1-0 defeat at home to Holland. The papers hailing it as George Burley's finest hour. Are they going to stick with him? Should they stick with him?
Last night's result isn't the one that's kept them out of the World Cup. It's losing in Oslo and losing in Skopje. I think it's probably cost them more.
No, to answer your question, no, they won't stick with it.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Okay. Elsewhere, Northern Ireland's dropped into third in their group after losing 2-0 to Slovakia, who are all but through. Northern Ireland, the Czech Republic and Poland could all still grab second. That didn't stop the Poles sacking their manager, Leo Benhacker. Today, the Czechs, meanwhile, what was it, 7-1 or something? 7-0 against San Marino. 4 goals from a young and exciting prospect called Milan Baroš. And Tomáš Rosický. Back after 20 months, Matt. You were just... Yeah, go on.
Well, yeah, I mean, good luck Northern Ireland. They've got to go out there and win in Prague in order to get into the playoffs. I think that's very unlikely.
Well, last time they were there, they actually had a great time, albeit in the lap dancing club after the match.
Right.
It's a beautiful city.
Right. Yes. Okay. Ireland didn't play. But Italy's return to form in their game with Bulgaria, 2-0 victory in Turin, means that the Italians have all but sewn up
just
spot.
On that point, that is my big hope for this tournament, is that Northern Ireland do finish second. Ireland also finish second. They get drawn against each other in the playoffs and say, hey, why don't we unite and both go to South Africa?
It could happen. It could happen. All right. Now, I mentioned...
uniting together than with the Great Britain Olympic team.
Well, Ireland, in the meantime, of course, are looking pretty safe. They're 5 points clear of Bulgaria in the race for second place in Group 8 because Italy have all but sewn up the top spot. Ireland will be hosting Italy in their next match at Croke Park. Cannavaro is suspended for that. And, you know, you might titter, but he's actually keyed a bit of a return to form by the Italian defence, who haven't conceded a goal in 4 games now and have finally got their forward scoring as well. Now, we talked about playoffs. We'll be looking at the dangerous floaters, as Matt entertainingly termed them earlier on, the teams that you might come up against in a playoff for an eventual World Cup spot. We'll be looking at all that later on, because before that, it's time to tackle the really big story in world football. Yes, Argentina. Quick reminder of a couple of things, actually. First of all, that we're doing a live pod, bless us, on the 20th of September. That's a Sunday, straight after some really big games. About 6 o'clock, we'll be live streaming on your computer. So do join us for that. In the meantime, if you're hungry for a bit of Barney Roney and his appletastic goodness, you can enjoy his take on the crazy world of managing and the history thereof, of course, in his special Roney vidcasts,
which are available right now on the Guardian football website. Terrific. Listen, the big story, of course, from Wednesday night's qualifiers was yet another defeat for Argentina, and that's Marcela Moreira Araujo joining us now. Marcela.
Hello.
The woman who, back when Argentina employed a former drug addict with a minimum of coaching experience, and that which he had been disastrous, told us, embrace the madness, embrace the madness. Is it time, Marcela, to embrace a new manager?
Well, I'm not sure that a new manager could fix this mess, James. I think there's several problems. One is, who would that manager be? Maradona's appointment was a desperate measure, but there wasn't any obvious alternative, and there are no more obvious alternatives now. And also, anyone who steps in now, I mean, what do they do with this? You know, it is a sinking ship, so how does someone else bring it afloat? I am suggesting, from the embrace the madness perspective, from the asylum, I suggest that he needs to build a team of professionals around him.
What, kind of counsellors, that kind of thing?
Yeah, straight jacket for all. I think this is also taking cue from his press conference where he said, I'm not going anywhere. If he quit because he feels he can't do it, then the hand would be forced and someone new would have to be found.
Out of left field, this idea, but fire him. He's lost 4 games out of 5. He's got a collection of some of the world's he's got the availability of some of the world's most admired players. Not all of them he calls up for his squad. And nobody expected him to be a tactical genius, but they did think that he might fire his players up for the game. Judging on the Paraguay must-win match, that certainly isn't the case.
No, I think there's definitely everything is going wrong in the squad, and that needs to change. He obviously motivationally he's failed, and it seems from the rumours one hears leaking out of the squad that there is discord and the kind of amazing admiration that some of the players might have felt for him to start off with is waning. I mean, I think the humanisation of Maradona is a painful process for all who admire him. You know, he has an incredible presence, this legendary prestige, and then actually there's also a bloke who's not that much to write home about.
One thing a new manager might do is select some of those players that haven't been called up. Riquelme is one. I was thinking more of Lisandro Lopez, Lucho Gonzalez, Gonzalo Higuain, players like that. How is Tevez getting in, and Martin Palermo getting on ahead of them?
I think, there's many points you raise, Mr. Doyle. I think Maradona's called 62 players, so one could argue that he should have called some more. I think Higuain is the most obvious question mark there, right? That, for me personally. And perhaps he will get called up now. The problem with Higuain seems to be, tragically, a sort of kind of playground spat between him and other members of the squad, and that's exactly the kind of thing that needs to shift. Well, I think Maradona should rise above that kind of thing and say it doesn't matter if Higuain and Gago don't get on. Mm. It doesn't, or whatever it is, I'm not sure the details, but, this kind of thing is what's going on. And it's not Maradona's fault. This is the kind of thing that always happens within a squad. Now, this is a group that has been battered, so it's more likely to be fragile and to break at the seams. With regard to why Palermo played yesterday, I think the notion is that it's because, following Saturday's performance, there was a popular clamour for taller, physically stronger
forward
players who could handle the ball in the
air.
But
Diego Milito? Well, anyway. Listen, are the knives in Argentina, are the knives out for him or for the players?
At the moment, there are polls in the papers saying, should Maradona resign? So far, the last time I checked this morning, 87% thought yes. Messi's come under a lot of fire, but I don't know if that's actually a popular reaction or the press. Messi seems to be not very popular and slightly being blamed. I think that this is maybe a bit unfair. But actually, a lot of the players will probably come under fire at some point. The problem is it's so clear that Maradona has been unable to improve on what was already quite a bad situation, that there is general discontent with all.
Argentina dropped to fifth place yesterday, which means they'll be heading into a playoff with the CONCACAF fourth place finisher. They have two more games. They're only 1 point ahead of Uruguay. Am I right in saying that their last game is away to Uruguay, and before that they've got Bolivia at home, is it?
And they're only 2 points ahead of Colombia and others. A lot of teams are in
queuing
contention.
Up to take that playoff place. You called it an impossible situation to save, Marcelo. Is that what you think? Are you resigned to them going into a playoff, or Lord forbid, even missing out on the World Cup altogether?
Well, I'm not resigned to anything. They face Peru at home, not Bolivia, before Uruguay. And then they go off to Uruguay. I think the Uruguay match is going to be incredibly tough because they're very close. It's the direct rival, if you like. But, I mean, impossible is nothing. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult because the shifts that have to happen, whatever they may be. I mean, it's like the mystery. What is going wrong with what you correctly termed some of the best players in the world, certainly available, if not on the pitch at any given time? And some incredibly profound changes have to take place. Whether Maradona remains in charge or someone else steps in, that those same issues will need to be addressed. And there isn't that much time to turn this into a team.
Marcelo, very sorry. Our thoughts are with you, and we'll be keeping an eye on all of that. Many, many thanks, though, for joining us.
Congratulations to all the English people.
Well, indeed, and it's very big of you to say that. Thanks, Marcelo Moreira-Rajo. If they stay in fifth place, who would they face? Well, currently the fourth place side in the CONCACAF group, you know, just to keep everybody abreast, is Costa Rica. It was Mexico before, but Costa Rica, who had that injury time? El Salvador had an injury time winner, is that right? No, who had the injury time winner against Costa Rica? Bollocks. Okay, it was Mexico before, but now Costa Rica, who were the group leaders, have dropped their third straight game. They're now in fourth. USA leading the group just ahead of Mexico. This has the potential to be the worst World Cup since 2002. No Argentina, no Portugal, and a load of crap teams like the two Koreas. Ivory Coast could also be a surprise, says PF10.
The worst 10. World Cup since 2002.
That's what PF10 says.
But worse even than 2006, you mean?
Well, a lot of people worrying about the prospect of a World Cup without Leo Messi. And indeed, Cristiano Ronaldo, World Player of the Year, and all that. And your man Rob Smythe talking on his Minute by Minute yesterday about the last time that the world's best players missed out. And I think Paul, you had come up with Puskás and Di Stefano in 1958.
Yeah, although you could make a case for 2002 when, I mean, Shevchenko, Roy Keane and Pavel Nedved were all top of the game. But it doesn't sound quite as good as Puskás.
Cruyff and Keegan.
Mick Shannon and Kevin Keegan in 1978.
Johan Cruyff. Oh, he was in the 78.
Yeah, well, Kevin Keegan was
but he didn't go. Yeah, Ronaldo, of course, not out of the picture completely because Portugal, in their group, they had a win in Hungary. And it's all going to come down, really, I guess, to Denmark playing Sweden next because Denmark are 3 points clear of Sweden, who are 2 points clear of Portugal and Hungary. It's all a bit mixed up there, isn't it?
Yeah, anything could happen in that match. A big fat fan could run on the pitch and cause it to be abandoned.
Denmark against Sweden, that's going to be a whopper. Yeah. Sweden, it has to be said, only just scraped past Malta. With a very late fluky goal.
Ibrahimovic winner, I believe. Mm.
And they say he doesn't perform in the big games. Now, in Group 2, Switzerland and Greece drew. Israel got back in the mix. Any one of four teams, really, Switzerland, Greece, Latvia and Israel could win the group.
Switzerland began their campaign with a home defeat by Luxembourg.
My word.
That should just rule them out of the World Cup straight
away.
It's
a terrible group. I think I'm not doing any disservice to those involved when I say it is a really abject group. Group 4, far from it, is between Germany and Russia. Germany 1 point ahead. They travel to Moscow on the 10th of October, as you know. That's going to be a huge game. In Group 5, Spain are now through. They've won all eight games, a bit like England. Bosnia held Turkey 1-1, so they are 4 points clear in the race for second place. Belgium's manager, Frankie Vercauteren's resigned. In Group 7, Paul Doyle, France. Rumours of a training ground bust-up between Raymond Domenech and your man
Henri.
Thierry Henry.
Henri he went on the TV news on Monday night to categorically deny those.
Really?
Those
what do you and think, Paul? What's your impression?
Well, they do have a good relationship going back a long way. In fact, Dominic was in charge of the France under 21 team when Henri was a youngster there, and he agitated on Henri's behalf for Aimé Jacquet to call him up for the 98 World Cup. So they've always had a good relationship. And yesterday when Henri scored, he ran over and gave his manager a big ostentatious hug on the sideline.
He might be pinching him, you know.
Maybe. Giving him a bit of... Yeah. Those hugs are not always sincere. I seem to remember he did something very similar to Jose Antonio Reyes after the Aragones thing, and those. I mean, he looked stunned, Reyes, because aren't you the bloke who set fire to my clothes the other day? Dominic is not a popular figure. He didn't commit any acts of arson in the Arsenal dressing room.
Right.
But he is not a popular figure in that French team at all. The coach. He came within a gnat's willy of being given the heave ho by the French Federation after the last World Cup, because Zidane completely lost it, not only with Materazzi but also him over his inability to lead a team. This is the French Federation's chickens coming home to roost, which is quite appropriate for the nation of Le Coq'erel.
Poulet, of course. Mm. Yeah, very much so. Well, having said that, that 1-1 draw in Serbia means that they are looking good for the runners-up spot. But of course, you know, that's far from a guarantee of making it, because somewhere I made a list of some of the teams you could meet in a runners-up thing. Russell, you got the likes of Sweden could be there, Portugal could well be, Germany in a runners-up spot the way things are going.
Or
Bosnia.
Russia. I mean, Russia. Or Russia.
Northern Ireland. Or the Czechs, of course. You know, there are going to be some tough games in those playoffs. In Africa, meanwhile, Paul Doyle, how many games to go?
Two.
Now, on the weekend, Ghana booked their place alongside South Africa.
Yeah, they
and
did.
Anyone else seal things or get close?
Well, Ivory Coast are very close. They just need a point. Cameroon got their campaign back on track. This time last week, they were bottom of their group. Now they're top, thanks to wins home and away over erstwhile group leaders Gabon. And Paul again has re-injected a bit of
They're born again with Paul Le Guin, ever since he's taken over from Otto Pfister.
Yes.
Yep. And of course, Samuel Eto'o, the hero.
Yeah, he's scored in both of those matches. He's been given the captain's armband after Le Guin took it off Rigobert Song. And he's linking up one thing that previous managers weren't able to do, was get the best out of Achille Emana. And in the last two games, they himself and Samuel Eto'o have linked up brilliantly.
Who is Achille, he
plays in La Liga. He's a very good player.
All right.
Can't remember who he plays for. It's either Sevilla or Betis, I think.
All right, what's his name again?
Achille Emana.
One to look out for. Samuel Eto'o, I believe, has scored 8 goals in 9 qualifiers, which is pretty impressive. I think you'll find.
Has it ever been in dispute that he knows where the goal is?
No.
All right. Not really.
All right.
We shouldn't be that surprised by that, I don't think. Are you surprised by that, John?
Not especially, no.
No.
All right, then. Good.
If he was Ghanaian, Ghana would have a brilliant chance at the next
World
Cup.
If he was Argentinian, he wouldn't be called up because he's not mates with Maradona. But there you go. Right, that's it for International Wide World of Football type thing, because we've got some posts to get through and that. And then we'll look at the Premier League fixtures for this weekend, eh? Right, quick look at some posts. Portlander says, having read last week's gripping blogathon on diving and this week's fascinating debate on youth transfers, I'd like to see the return of people being allowed to post first, second, etc. Not sure that's entirely fair, but I do take your point. Portlander. James Hill posting in, saying, after last year's bad press for the likes of Newcastle and Charlton, how about a bit of recognition for them? They've taken their relegations in their stride and currently sit on top of the tree in their respective divisions. Alan Smith's been a bit of a star for the Magpies too, is that right, John?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, they've both had fantastic starts.
All right. He knows where the goal is, doesn't he?
Who, Alan Smith?
Smith.
Didn't he know sort of about a decade ago? And then it slipped his mind.
But they're looking good. They've responded well to relegation, because sometimes psychologically it's just a hammer blow. If you know, I don't want to use cliches. Yeah.
Newcastle are the surprise, really. There was a sense before the season started that they were going to have a bit of a, particularly a nightmare start once things, you know, because things were so much up in the air over the summer. And you sort of expected them to take a bit of time to adjust. And
are they not still up in
the air? Well, they are, but you know, this is what I'm saying. You'd expect them to struggle on the pitch and take a bit of time to get used to the new surroundings. But they've, you know, ducks to water. Perhaps they were playing at the wrong level last season.
Right. Well, that's quite possible. Now, on the subject of Chelsea, Bad to the Bone says, I think it's time to cut through the hypocrisy and accept the fact that the powers that be have only themselves to blame for the frankly unworkable situation which has led to the Kakuta incident and other comparable cases. It's all UEFA's fault for their quota thing that they want imposed, says Bad to the Bone. B. Pires says,
I find it offensive to liken what Chelsea, Man United and Arsenal do to child trafficking when there is, in fact, real child trafficking going on in football and FIFA don't do anything about it. Well, Matt Scott.
Absolutely. Can I just say that the somebody who does follow events in France from a distance, I've got to say, I think that this is rank hypocrisy from French clubs. Their own government has been talking about the extent of what you are talking about there, poster, child trafficking. They are saying that people get to are brought over, recruited, as one of the French senators refers to it, from Africa, and then completely discarded, treated like illegal immigrants without a future. He says that it is La République Française who brings these people over. We have some responsibilities towards them, and it is a question of dignity for these poor kids. You know, they come over and they can't go home.
And it's been going on for years, not just in France, but in Italy. It was certainly a massive thing that used to go on in the 90s, and I think Spain as well. The hope would be that maybe there's going to be an overhaul of your whole kind of youth regulations, and maybe they'll look into this as well. That would be nice. On the subject of Paddy Kenny, who's just got a 9-month ban. What did he take? A cough medicine?
Night nurse, I think it was.
Yeah. Night nurse, and he's got a 9-month ban for that.
Yeah, incredibly harsh, ridiculous.
Saint of Wrong says.
Talking about not having bias, hyperbole at all at any stage when talking about Arsenal or England, can we just have a disclaimer here?
I did say it with a rather large smile on my face.
All right, okay. is
there an ephedrine?
Visible even to our pod listeners.
is there an ephedrine in night nurse, though?
Apparently so. Yeah, if you take it, I think he took it the day before the game. That was the problem.
But surely players know.
Yeah, no, he should be banned for 9 months for being thick.
All right.
Basically.
Okay. You can see a lot of suspensions heading the way of
Premier League
football as well, and Championship indeed. Saint of Wrong, anyway, saying that I don't really care about Adrian Mutu. This Paddy Kenny thing is all wrong. I've summarised that. McLino, are you guys planning to have a booth somewhere in South Africa next year? Not sure yet. I think the plan is... Wow, I'm hearing live from producer Pete that there's talk of a van, because you know there are some transport issues in South Africa. There might be some kind of mini bus type thing. I got first dibs on the penthouse with the sun machine. Right, okay. Now Argyle, hey Jimbo, read the previous pod and why Leonardo at Milan should be worried now that Spalletti has left Roma. Isn't there a rule, says Argyle, saying that no manager can manage more than one Serie A team in the same season? Absolutely spot on. Having said that, this is Italy, and you know what they say about rules, and we've seen plenty of regulations bent in both above and below the table, to allow managers to take over at clubs in trouble before now, Roberto Mancini on various occasions. So I wouldn't think that would necessarily be a problem, especially because Galliani, who's the vice president at Milan, has spent years as vice president of the Italian league as well.
Recalling from previous...
As president of the Italian league, sorry. Yeah.
Recalling from previous pods and enlightening contributions about Serie A from yourself... Don't they all have like squads of unemployed managers that they've sacked and keep on?
Roberto Mancini is still on Inter's books, but yes, they do, because it's the same thing as in the Premiership. It's just that in the Premier League, when you get fired, you get a lump sum, they pay off your contract. Whereas in Italy, they just keep you around. The funny thing is, though, that if they fire your replacement, they are legally, by the terms of their contract, entitled to call you back up to retake training. There have been some nasty legal standoffs where the originally fired manager has said, I'm not going for that. Luciano Spalletti himself has had to do this on various occasions. I'm always trotting this stat out. On one season, he was fired by Sampdoria to bring in David Platt with predictably brilliant consequences and then brought back in again. The next season, he thought, I've had enough of this club. So he went to Venezia, where he was fired, and they brought somebody else in, and they didn't do very well, so they brought him back in, because legally he had to, but within 3 games he found himself fired a second time in the same season by the same club. So there you go. Spalletti, we salute you. And now, returning to the world of the Premier League, this weekend sees England's top division back in action, and there are some tip-top fixtures. Paul Doyle, you're chuckling, but I'm serious.
I'm going to Portsmouth Bolton.
Oh, right. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
You got lost... Pick, did you?
Two teams on 0 points.
Right. Well, that'll be interesting. You know, there's certainly plenty to play for. There are plenty of, you call them acid tests, I presume. You know, teams that have promised well, started well. Man City, for example, who won their first, however many it is now, three, four?
Four, isn't it?
Four, yeah, okay. But now they're going to be hosting Arsenal.
Adebayor and Toure back to their facing their former club.
So much to look forward to.
You sort of get the sense that Arsenal would love to put City back in their box a little bit and put them in their place.
And lo, they will.
Do you think so, mate?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, a little disclaimer from your point of view as well.
No, yeah, I mean, yes, I really want to see Arsenal put Man City in their box, but I genuinely believe they are the best team in the league. I know that everybody's going to rain opprobrium upon me for this, but I genuinely think they've got the best players. Arsenal have not been diminished at all by the departure of the marvellous Adebayor. I truly think he's a wonderful player. And Toure, when they've replaced him with Arshavin and Vermaelen. Vermaelen is the key.
Arguably the player of the season so far, no?
So far, and... Can I have a little digression on Arsenal? When you have squaddies learning how to fight wars, they know that they can get hurt. But if they see somebody step on a landmine and lose their leg, psychologically it will traumatise them. Likewise, Arsenal's young boys come to England, know that it's a physical game over here and that it can hurt. But then they watch Eduardo get broken in half by Martin Taylor and it traumatised them. They were 6 points clear in February 2008, was it? 2007 in the Premier League. And that incident occurred. It destroyed them for 8 months. Last year, I'm pretty sure that Arsene Wenger confected quite a few injury problems that weren't really there and was just saying, right, lads, OK, we'll do enough to get fourth this year. Off you go, get yourselves fresh, have a holiday, come back ready for this season. And this is the year that Arsenal will have that assault. They've still got the same squad as they had in February that year, give or take a Toure or an Adebayor, but they have the belief, the hunger, and I genuinely believe that with Man United diminished and Liverpool equally, Arsenal will win the title this year.
My word.
Chelsea notwithstanding.
My word. Are Man City going to rain on that particular parade, do you think, Bulldog?
No, I think Arsenal will do well this year. I still think Chelsea are favourites, but right. I put Arsenal down a second.
Well, Chelsea are at Stoke, of course, and I don't think anything in Carlo Ancelotti's admittedly illustrious career can have prepared him for a visit to the Britannia Stadium. I'm joking, of course, because Ancelotti was. It's not like I've never been to a provincial side before. Britannia, admittedly, is a hostile ground, but it is going to be an interesting test, though, this for Chelsea too, Nespar.
Yes, it is. And
can Ancelotti ever have seen an atmosphere like at Stoke's Britannia throughout his career in Serie A? He will be frightened to the core.
Chelsea won four on the bounce. Let me help you out here. But Stoke, you know, they've strengthened enormously over the summer, Paul.
They have, yeah. They've made some very judicious signings. I don't think they're as strong as Chelsea.
All right.
But they will certainly test.
Surely Ancelotti would swap Drogba for James Beattie, wouldn't he?
Right.
Wouldn't you?
I would.
John, what have you got to know?
Well, I've got a bit of a stat for you that Chelsea's last five visits to Stoke, the home side have failed to score. Oh. And the last time that Stoke have scored against Chelsea at home was back at the Victoria Ground in 1975.
Right. All right. Well,
the relevance of that is questionable.
But. Okay. Well, what about Spurs then? Who have a rotten record in September, of course. You know, if we're going to go back through the annals, and they're hosting Manchester United. Are Manchester United for real this year?
Yeah. Well, they will be, won't they? But to take the Spurs angle, people will build this up as an acid test. I genuinely don't think it is. I think the acid test for Spurs are the games against the Blackburns and the Fulhams, where if they are genuine or would want to be genuine top four contenders, they need to take 3 points, not just one. And I think Spurs will probably eke out a draw at the weekend, but I don't necessarily think that's going to have a huge bearing on their season.
Right, OK. At the moment, Chelsea and Tottenham leading the way in the Premier League, 3 points ahead of Man United and Man City, with Stoke just ahead of Arsenal there. Stoke in fifth place. Interesting. There you go.
They haven't been to Goodison or Old Trafford, though, have they?
No, that's true. They haven't, have they?
No. Arsenal have.
Indeed they have. You know what? I haven't mentioned Blackburn Wolves, Liverpool Burnley, Portsmouth Bolton, and then on Sunday, Birmingham Aston Villa. Interesting derby affair there.
I'd go on a limb and say that's the best derby in the Premier League.
The Birmingham Aston Villa, why?
Particularly if Peter Enkelman's playing.
Well, it just tends to be an exciting derby. I think there was 9 goals in the two games between the sides last time they met. Maybe the North London derby would you know, people would perhaps have a thing to say about that. But I think it tends to be a genuinely good game when Birmingham and Villa meet.
Final game on Sunday is Fulham against Everton. Both teams off to a rotten start. 3 points each. They're in 15th and 16th places. And so they'll both be looking to get things back on track. Kicking off almost to the very second that this podcast becomes available will be the European Championship
Women's final between England and Germany in Helsinki, and best of luck, of course, to England. Obviously, the timing of that match means it's impossible for us to renege on our earlier poo-pooing and jump on their bandwagon. Our best wishes are with them, of course, and may the best women win. That is it for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back on Monday when we'll have Sid Lowe, the return thereof, and a look at what happened in Italy over the weekend. A tip-top Genoa-Napoli game to look forward to there. And all sorts of other delights as well. But in the meantime, it is many, many thanks to John Ashdown.
Cheers.
Matt Scott. Yep. Paul Doyle.
Thanks, James.
Producer Pete. And you, the listener, for doing the hard part. We'll be back on Monday, as I think I just mentioned. See you then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.